you agree with me?
Yeah.
Leo, what was that?
That you don't have to limit yourself to this classroom to do this exercise. Yeah. So, any reflections on this exercise?
Very good.
Very good. Nitai Chirambrupu says, yes.
Open on.
Huh?
Talking everybody open on heart.
Yeah. Yeah, very nice.
Relax, good.
Yeah, open our hearts to the devotees, yes.
I was just sharing, when I was with my spiritual master, his name is Jamtak Swami Tirupati, he did a disciples retreat, and he's discussing how, like, what we're practicing now, he goes, actually, it should be a daily affair. It's not just when we, you know, do it, it should be daily practice.
Mm-hmm.
Glorify.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, Brooke.
I think it helps to deepen and strengthen the relationship between the devotees for the longer term as well, which is very important.
Very nice. Yes, thank you.
Sometimes you forget actually some of the positives because a little minor negative is in the way, and it's nice because it brings that positivity back in the forefront.
Yeah, increases our appreciation of the devotees, yes.
When the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would fight, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would bring those two individuals, and then in turn he'd say, okay, now glorify this devotee. And in such a way, you actually realize how elevated that person is. Mm-hmm. So it's taking you away from the negative and concentrating on the positive.
Okay.
So yeah, it should be like a daily practice.
Thank you. This is traditional practice for our sampradaya. Thank you. That's very good that we don't bring stuff from outside, you know, because some people say, you know, who is that Uttama Shloka Das? He's teaching us something, you know, some professional stuff which has nothing to do with our tradition, but yeah, it's part of our tradition. Thank you.
Sometimes we can misunderstand different devotees, and I think this gives us an opportunity to really sort of appreciate that person, rather than looking at the negatives and obstacles.
Repair the relationship?
Yeah, repairing and just appreciating. And in turn, that helps us to overcome that anartha.
Yeah, thank you, yes. Yeah, because the main anartha we're all struggling with is envy towards Krishna. And this envy towards Krishna reflects in envying others. And glorifying others and appreciating others is the opposite. So that definitely works on helping us to get rid of our anarthas. Thank you.
When we appreciate other people, we also realize that there's so much we can learn from them.
Mm.
And together we can grow and become better.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you.
I think also there's a tendency to appreciate or glorify only devotees who, like, regularly attend the temple or something, and that person could have done a great significant service for the temple, but for personal reasons or health reasons or whatever, mm-hmm. has not come as often, and we forget those people.
Mm-hmm.
So when we try to remember every devotee that's in our community, I think that's important.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
My guru once said, yes, this is one thing. You'll be successful as a president. If you give the credit to others, don't take the credit. Anything you offer here, don't take yourself the credit. Give the credit to others for their performance. That is the secret of success. Life on to
it works. Thank you. Okay. All right, so one request which came from two devotees, same request, and this point we cannot skip because I think it is important. Difference between self-esteem and false pride, because sometimes it is taken to be the same thing, high self-esteem and false pride. But anyway, we can discuss that, but you know, like they say, picture is worth a thousand words, and example is much better than precept. So let's try We should have one volunteer, and we should see how it works on the on one person, and see if building self-esteem boosts false ego or not. Anyone who is bold enough to come forward?
It should be a guy, right?
It doesn't matter.
You should want somebody with false pride, then.
Anyone has false pride, to some extent. So it can be a man or lady, doesn't matter.
It should be a lady,
son. So now let's do things which would help him to, you know, make his self-esteem or self-respect higher by sharing your appreciations. But this should be a genuine appreciations, illustrated by specific examples, right? So yeah, please.
So you've got a family with two kids, yet you still take time out to preach. Because conscious, you've still dedicated to the temple, and you started the Bhakti Riksha, and you're really still going strong in that. So thank you very much.
Ribble.
You know, I think you've been quite a pioneer with KC Socks. You know, you were full, you know, working full hours. At the same time, you know, going up to Leeds, Leicester, Birmingham, Aston University, you know, each day you were always preaching. So you've really been a true example, actually, how a devotee should be giving as much time to Krishna consciousness. And you have been sacrificing so much to do that, but you really realizing that ultimate goal. So it's very inspiring to see that.
I think 90% of us, at least in this room, wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Nitya Kirtan Prabhu. I mean, from a very young age, giving the example of myself, he's always been encouraging. He's been a mentor to many of us in this room, and he's just all around a great person. It's just amazing.
Thank you.
I think, yeah, I agree with Mother and General that a lot of students have gone away after 3 years at uni, and I think the one thing that they have taken away from them is Krishna consciousness, and that was a gift from the Dagger people, because he would week in, week out, you know, come do the talks. And besides the KC Stock programs, I think the Dagger people probably used to, around the Tuesdays and Thursdays, you should give your own personal time and develop friendships with people, and I think those friendships have lasted, you know, 10, 15 years on. So, thank you.
Wonderful. Somebody else?
Can we start now?
No, it's all right. We can go for a little longer. Mataji?
I really appreciate Mr. Kirtan's attitude of always considering the welfare of devotees. He's always asking about each and every devotee, and he spends time, takes time out to talk to them. And specifically, I think his dedication for Harinam is very admirable. He keeps that going, and he has kept that going. He's been kind of like one of the backbones of the Harinam.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very valuable service, and you should never ever give it up.
Thank you.
Many things have been said, but one thing that inspires me about Prabhu is his kirtans.
Yeah.
They're very inspiring. I was always good to be in his kirtans. And also, the first time I went to Dham was with Nitya Kirtan Prabhu, who was so loving. He looked after me so nicely, and I didn't know anyone too well. It felt like I'd known him for such a long time. And he put like, me in front of like himself, and I felt so loved, and I felt like I'd known him for years. And he treated me like an older brother, which I'll never forget.
Good.
What I like most about him, I've been in Krishna consciousness for just for 2 years now. And his classes, they just stand out. His classes are so light-hearted that he just conveys the essence of the class in such a playful manner that I'd never drift away when his class is on. Sometimes I do drift away in other classes. But in his class, I'm there, and I've cried in his classes, I've laughed in his classes, and I go back and I can reflect back, and I tell my sons about his class, and they love to listen. Otherwise, they just shrug me off. Of the Krishna consciousness. So this is what stands out for me.
Yeah. And for me, I think I find that he's got leadership qualities which are very useful to our movement. And the things he does, they're very complementary. You know, he's not just following the daily routines of Krishna consciousness. He's actually put his own input in there and complemented the whole movement, as far as Brahman is concerned, anyway. So, and he lives by example.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very good.
Okay.
I want to thank Nitakirtan because when me and my brother were younger, he used to encourage us a lot to do things on a spiritual level. A few examples was we used to do a magazine when I think we were about 6 or 7. We used to write this Krishna Conscious magazine on a piece of paper in this attic in Balmer Road. And then when we were 8 or 9, he used to tell us to learn verses. One of the first verses he taught us was Chinadu Pisuni Chinna. And that was when I was 8. When I was 11, you know, he took us on Harinam up and down my road.
Thank you. I locked myself in the toilet. At least 2 hours, hopefully that gift will probably leave my house. Michael, have you finished? No, Michael. Mohan, have you finished? And literally, there was no mridanga in those days. We had half a tabla. Just literally, me and my brother and that gift going up and down the road. God knows what people are thinking. When I was 11. You know, when I was at university in Leicester, when we started Casey Stocking in Leicester, you know, Nitakirtan Prabhu used to come an hour to Leicester, an hour back. He used to stay with us, used to do all the lectures, all the talks. And it's, you know, it takes a lot to do that, so thank you.
Well, in actual what Mataji said about Nitakirtan's classes, I think no one does Leela Katha like Nitakirtan, Leela Kirtan even. He's so like bubbly, he has the sound effects, he makes you cry, he makes you laugh, he's spontaneous, he'll get the you know, the audience involved, he'll act out plays and
sound effects are brilliant.
Yeah, so
creates the mood.
I don't think anyone is as bubbly as Nitakirtan. When we hear that at the festival when Nitakirtan's giving class, I think everyone tries to make it just for the class. So.
You have to ask the kitchen people to cook more because he's giving the class.
Can we stop? All right. We'll spare him. But let's see. Let's see how falsely proud he became now. Let's ask him, does it make you feel very proud? Just tell us how you feel after all this.
I have a technique that I always use when somebody's glorifying. So if you'd asked me this before I started using this technique, I would say, yeah, it probably started to make me feel proud. Like, wow, I'm actually a really good guy. But when somebody's glorifying, I see that they're glorifying somebody else. And I also just kind of look and say, oh, okay, this is that person. I take it as a third party, if you like. So I don't see that they're glorifying me, I see they're glorifying somebody else. And if it does affect me, then I've heard you should give it all to your spiritual master, so I just glorify him. But I'm only here because my spiritual master is there. And so only by his mercy, whatever anybody is saying, it's all by his mercy. So Srila Prabhupada's mercy. So
okay.
Let's give it to them.
So doesn't sound or doesn't look to you that it made him proud? Huh?
Yeah.
So what's your conclusion?
That, I think, it's a two-way thing. This when you glorify a devotee, which is important, it's also the devotee has to be able to receive it as a Vaishnava. So, like Nitakirtan said, offer it to the spiritual master, offer it back to Krishna. So it works both ways. If you learn how to give and receive.
Alright, thank you.
Also, there's a way to glorify the devotee as well. So, for example, if you just take Ricky's example, he said, oh, Nitakirtan, look, videos, Nitakirtan's kirtans. But let's say if I said it to make him prosper, your kirtans are amazing, you know, you're better than Madhav, you are, you know, you really are, you know, that is more way of making him proud. That's not really
you know, it's not a full life, you know, proper glorification, that'd be like making him more proud.
Mm-hmm.
There's, I think there's a way to glorify Curtis as well.
All right.
Glorification means to, purpose of the glorification is to encourage him, not to make him proud.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
If he's proud, then why are you going to glorify him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
He's not worthy of glorification.
Yeah. Thank you.
Your advice is to say don't make the person get puffed up.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Ruth. Let's give him a big hand. Was not very easy. Not at all.
I'm not used to it.
Yeah. You felt like it's your first piece of food. Only a couple of dozens of devotees. But you know, it's just the beginning after all.
So, I mean, the thing is, he's somebody nicely, but just somebody like myself, if by chance somebody was to glorify me, I would be very scared. And I think, well, if they think this about me, I say, Krishna, please don't let me lose it. I mean, is that a wrong thing, wrong attitude to have?
Yeah.
To be afraid to lose that glorification? That,
as in the qualities.
Yeah.
The qualities that they glorify.
They're glorified in me, obviously. I hope I don't lose them then.
Yeah.
Is that a wrong thing to do?
So, yeah, actually, you can see that if you're genuinely helping devotees to build their self-esteem, it does not make them falsely proud. What it does, it helps them to develop what?
Humility.
Yeah, real humility. Because there is a thing like false humility, you know, like faking humility, which we're not specifically dealing as part of yoga of success. It comes later, but it's there. But humility has to be genuine. And what is genuine humility, and who is the best example in all respects, including genuine humility?
I was just going to, I don't know if that's the right answer, but Srila Prabhupada, because there's that one pastime where he was asked whether he ever fall down, and he said no, but then he spent hours in front of Radharani crying and praying, please don't let me fall.
Yeah.
That was real humility.
Yes, yes.
But in front of, at the time, he showed bravery and...
Yeah, he's our greatest model in all respects, including real humility, true humility. And that true humility was manifesting himself, was manifesting itself in many different ways, like one reflection on Srila Prabhupada by a disciple, that Srila Prabhupada looks at the devotees, at his disciples, and says, just see what a great diamond my spiritual master made out of me, and puts his chadar across his shoulders, you know, walks away like that, you know, uplifted head. So this is a person, and at the same time, you know, we cannot imagine anyone being really more genuinely humble than Srila Prabhupada. So we can see that self-esteem, and then if we look at false pride, why do you think, and how, yeah, just give me examples how false pride manifests in people.
When you think you're that independent of Krishna, that you can do things without Krishna.
Yeah. And other manifestations?
We think we're better than...
Yeah, so-and-so. Putting others down. Yeah. And trying to put yourself up.
Oh.
Yeah. And why do you think this comes about?
Because low self-esteem.
Low self-esteem, exactly. False pride means low self-esteem. Therefore, just to balance it out, people trying to project themselves as something great, you know, to... They cannot prove to themselves that they are great, so they're trying to prove to others to prove to themselves, right, that they are so great. So false pride is really low self-esteem. But high self-esteem means one is genuinely humble. And, because high self-esteem again, means no one can take advantage of that person. At the same time, that person is genuinely humble. Like, again, Srila Prabhupada was such a brilliant example of that. Just one story to finish it off. One reporter is trying to, you know, ask Srila Prabhupada a question about very kind of touchy issue. And the motivation of that reporter is to connect Prabhupada's name to that touchy issue and publish it in, you know, like very kind of bad newspaper, because he comes from that bad newspaper. And then he keeps asking Prabhupada about this touchy issue. And then Srila Prabhupada actually asking him a question. You know, he's asking Prabhupada a question, but then Prabhupada's asking him a question. And the question Prabhupada's asking him was, do you want to hear from me what you're interested in, or you want to hear the truth? And that reporter gets a little bit confused. He says, well, of course, I want to hear the truth. And then Srila Prabhupada says, okay, the truth is that you are a spiritual being as well as anyone else. We're all not the body, we're spirit souls, and Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and he keeps preaching to the guy about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness for a good half an hour. And he is listening very respectfully. And then probably for the first time in the history of that newspaper, he's publishing very positive article about Krishna consciousness. So this is high self-esteem. To take someone that low and that crooked and turn that person's mind, you know, 180 degree on the spot and make that person Krishna conscious, this is what we call high self-esteem in Krishna consciousness. And so we should all strive to be like that and help each other in that way, because that's possible only in an environment of inspiring devotee association.
All right, to Krishna. So thank you.
And we have to, you know, convince Krishna to accept you for the service, right? So this would be really good exercise. And then if you do it seriously enough, you might be accepted for a very serious service by Krishna also. Right? Everyone likes the idea of the exercise? Just for yourself and for Krishna. Okay. So
that to help us with our self-esteem.
Yeah, absolutely. Because by it is called self-inventory. What do I have? What good do I have to offer to Krishna in his service? And then by doing this self-inventory, that makes you more aware of your potential and helps you to utilize that potential in Krishna's service, right? So that's the idea of the self-inventory, self-inventory exercise. Okay? So try and do that self-inventory whenever you have a spare time. All right? And so, as you probably felt, that these are very unorthodox topics we are discussing and practicing here, right? Anyone ever came across even discussing what to speak of practicing these kind of topics before? Anyone had the experience? Nothing you can remember.
Nothing that was related to Krishna. I mean, we get these exercises and cross-sectional, program, but not related to Krishna.
Oh, you mean in professional work?
Yeah.
Yes. And I think it is important that, one of the ideas of, this kind of exploration and exercises is to help us to see how it all related to Krishna and how all of this has to be used in Krishna's service, right? Okay. So, are there any questions still pending? Is everything clear?
Yes. Just so it's clear, in my head, when you said, just think of it like, if you're in an interview, think of it as Krishna's there.
Yeah.
So, if that was the case, we probably all feel like, oh my God, I want it. So, are we trying to, so we can, so we're realizing we're doing it for Krishna? That's why you're saying,
yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's not a game, it's for real, actually. Because Krishna is there and we're trying to serve Krishna. And, that could actually help us to do it better.
I just want to ask about, this power of expectation, like when we're dealing with them, trying to build self-esteem, especially with children, who are junior to us. If we put expectation, if we put that as a goal, then sometimes the children get scared to reach, to measure up to the expectation that we have of them. So what's the difference between, the way you were expressing power of expectation? How do we use it that doesn't harm their... It can actually harm if we put an expectation on them.
Yeah. Shouldn't be too high. Should be realistic. We'll be talking about that when we will be discussing the subject of goals, of goal setting, because actually this is, and I think we were mentioning it yesterday, this is the main idea of the course. Definitely, we were discussing that with Madhav Prabhu yesterday, that the main reason the essence of this course is to help all of us to become more successful by setting very specific and very powerful goals in Krishna consciousness for ourselves, which Srila Prabhupada wanted very much devotees to do on annual basis, and he actually gave instructions, especially to his leaders, that they have to set themselves annual goals. And of course, we know one of the famous verses from the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Yavasi Atmika Bhuti Rekeha Purunandana Bahu Shakahyanantasya Bhuthaya Vyavasayana, and that those who are on this path, their aim is one. And those who are, what's that? That they are resolute in purpose and their aim is one, but how does it go?
The
mind of those
are many branched.
Yeah, many branched. Those who are irresolute, mind of those who are irresolute are many branched. Rather, intelligence of those who are irresolute is many branched. So, Krishna explains the importance of being focused, resolute in purpose, as Prabhupada says. Ekeha Purunandana, to become that Ekeha. And of course, our a single goal in Krishna consciousness is to please Krishna. But then we have to do that, we have to understand ourselves, and we have to understand what can we do, and also what we want to do, because the desire is the greatest fuel which helps us to move forward. So we have to, you know, our desire should be a very strong motivation. So yeah, and it's very well known that the power of very clear goals and the power of goal setting, and yeah, if we do that in Krishna consciousness, we can do many, many amazing things for Krishna. We can transform not only the entire Birmingham into Krishna conscious city, but the whole UK, if we want, or the whole world, depends on how ambitious you are.
So just one more question about related to yesterday, what you were saying about success. How you wanted to arrive money, power, but you wanted it for Krishna. But the question I was wondering was that, like, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in Shikshastakam that we should pray Natanam Najanam Nasundrim. So, how does that reconcile? We see some devotees like Sudama Brahmin. He did not want to earn Krishna's wealth, he did not want to have that. Yet, in the end, Krishna still gave him that. So how do we measure success? And after yesterday's talk, we were talking about victory. These things are certain for a devotee. Victory, wealth, but that's what we... I don't know how to reconcile these two things.
Anyone can comment on that? Anyone can give an explanation? Should not be hard. Should not be too hard to answer that question, I think.
The new Dishnu Maharaj said he didn't want it for himself anyway.
Yeah.
So when Mahaprabhu was praying in the Shastakam, that's about not desiring it for himself.
Yeah.
In a way, like yesterday, you said the Dishnu Maharaj, he wanted it, but so that other outsiders would appreciate the devotees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, what I noticed and what makes a perfect sense, that all of us have material desires. Is it correct? Otherwise, we would not be in a material world. And so material desire, if it is unfulfilled, then it stands in the way of our Krishna conscious development. So if we are unsuccessful, we'll be thinking of how do we become successful. But if we are successful, then we can think of how can we use that for Krishna. And so, you know, failure can never be used in Krishna consciousness. And if we talk about examples like Sudama Brahmana, he was not a failure because he was Krishna's associate, so he didn't care. And in the same way, we can see, you know, very clear example for us is six Goswamis, like Raghunath Das Goswami, son of the richest people probably in the whole India. And then he became a famous renunciate. But then when he actually needed money for the service, it was immediately provided to him. That probably some of you heard the story that one very rich businessman, merchant, he wanted to give a donate all his money to one temple in Himalayas, but then the deity of that temple came to him in a dream and told him to go to Radhakund, find Raghunath Das Goswami and give him all the money. This is what he did. Just because Raghunath Das Goswami got the order to restore Radhakund and make it suitable for pilgrimage and attract people. So these are the examples that these are the renounced people. This is the thing, that before we renounce, we have to have something to renounce from, right? Otherwise, what Srila Prabhupada was telling about renunciation.
Monkey renunciation.
Yeah, monkey renunciation. You know, like, or the. I'm not sure if this example is coming from Prabhupada or not, but anyway, it's a famous example. You come into the bank, you know, say Barclays, and, you know, request for a meeting with the, you know, branch manager, and tell the guy, you know, I was thinking for a long time, and I think I can, I want to renounce all the money in your bank. I think I don't want them any longer. That would be a very strange thing, right? Whether this money belonged to us in the first place or not. So in the same way, renouncing what is there in the material world for renunciation's sake is that ridiculous. You know, renunciation without Krishna consciousness is that ridiculous. And that is Mayavad, or impersonal renunciation. But our renunciation is that not just give it up, but give it to Krishna. So that's the difference. And yeah, to give something to Krishna, we have to have something first. Like Srila Prabhupada joked, talking to his disciples. By the way, Srila Prabhupada was very famous for his ability to, you know, he had very fine humor. And oftentimes he was joking using himself. You know, that also shows that he had no false pride. He was asking his disciples, what's the difference between me and six Goswamis? Some of you heard that, right? No? And because he said six Goswamis were preaching, I am preaching. Six Goswamis were writing books, I am writing books. Six Goswamis were worshipping so many deities, I am worshipping so many deities. Six Goswamis were establishing temples, I am establishing so many temples. So any difference between me and six Goswamis? And disciples were saying, no, Srila Prabhupada, no difference between you and six Goswamis. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, there is a very big difference. And disciples were asking, so what is the difference? And he said, the difference is that six Goswamis every night were sleeping under a different tree. And every night I'm sleeping in a different palace. And we know it well, right? You go to Bhaktivedanta Manor, you know, like Prabhupada's quarters, that's very luxurious quarters. How many of us can afford that? Or you go to LA Temple, how many of you have been to LA Temple, yeah? Very luxurious quarters, all over the world. So Prabhupada had palaces, and people at his disposal, thousands, who were ready to do anything Prabhupada asked them. So Prabhupada had everything. But did that change him? Did that influence him? Not at all. Because right from the start, he was set to use everything for Krishna. He had that goal in the beginning, and that's why it didn't bewilder him. So that's a model for us. Rather than becoming a sentimental, quote-unquote, Babaji and, you know, kind of retire at Radhakund. Prabhupada was calling them mushrooms. Those who are sitting and doing nothing for Krishna. No benefit at all. Our Krishna consciousness should not be sentimental like that. Of course, there are genuine ones.
Your purpose is to say that we are building this.
Huh?
We are building these palaces for the people to teach. Because if we don't build it, we will not come.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, because real Krishna consciousness is compassion towards other people and desire to give them Krishna. Definitely, they won't be attracted by, you know, mushroom practices. All right? So, now the topic which is the next one is actually the topic of the entire section of all the six chapters, and that is Karma Yoga. And we'll be speaking about universal principles of cooperation and sacrifice, that cooperation can only exist can only be built on the foundation of sacrifice. And we'll be looking at the sacrifice not as a mere religious ritual, but as a foundational principle